Mr. Cheeseman, reel six. We were working through the typical day that a recruit did at that time.
Yes, well, I was seeing that the first period was drill square. Come 10 o'clock, of course, 10 o'clock tea break, nothing. But at 10:30, we all had to be ready in gym kit. We're going down to the gym. Now, there was another, he was a sergeant in the Army Physical Training Corps, and he was another little dodgy little full of it. And actual fact, and we saw him do this, he could actually run at the wall, run up at 2 or 3 pairs, turn around and come back again. And what he couldn't do on the floor, you know, as regards floor exercise, as you see on the, he was magnificent. Now, he was just similar to Bill Rivers. He wouldn't stand any nonsense, but he said, "Hey, when you lads want, after parade, that's after 5 o'clock, when you come down, work out, be my guest," you know, and we actually did, that'll show you. Well, I was in the Boy Scouts. I won a great number of prizes and I was in sports gear at high jump. And I was rather good at high jump. And he took me under his hand. And of course, I was doing the old fashioned sitters over there. And he taught me how to do the Western roll. And I put another ball 18 inches on my height. And in fact, at the time, I just missed being best at the highest jumper in Bobington. I was second in the world, so I didn't have to back. I'm digressing. That would take us up to
this the drill would be what the old Swedish drill, the arms up and oops, down and clapping your sides and bending your legs.
Running and wall bars, parallel bars, horse, also I take it outside and jumping across on the ropes and what have you. All that you see today, except the really modern stuff that's come on since then, I'm going to say that, you know, I never learned the Fosdyke flop, which you put it. I mean, the world record for high jump then, I think, was something like 5'3". It's 7 foot something, you know. I hope it's jumping to 5 foot.
How long would your PT lesson take?
It would up till 12 o'clock. Then back, out of gym kit, and get your stuff into soap, because it had to be washed and really dry for next day. Because there was, the routine I'll take you through would change in order, but it would be the same, wouldn't it? And you'd have to have it washed and dry and ready for next day, you see. And then, of course, we'd be marched over. By this time, we'd say the sergeant doesn't bother the corporal, taken over by a crew leader, what have you, marched over the dining hall, same routine as breakfast.
And what would you get for lunch, or likely to get for lunch?
That's where I got my first curry, and I really enjoyed, the food was really good, I really enjoyed it. But it would, the meat and veg, the usual, curry and rice, plumbed off, of course. It was what you would expect in those days. There's no cordon bleu. It was good, tasty food. And incidentally, I must digress a little bit as regards the preparation of the food by a whole team of cooks. A chap would get up about 3 o'clock in the morning, go across and stoke up a vertical boiler get it stoked up and what have you, so that you get the steam ready ahead of steam on, because the cooking was done by steam. It's a lot of your gas or what have you. And the state he was in, the colliery I was, actually he was, but that's, it was all done by pressure cooking, it really was spotless. And of course, the washing up was done by bubbling steam through water and whatever. But getting back to mealtime.
And they were good cooks, well cooked.
They were very, very good. And the office were naturally, of course, had come around every mealtime, any complaints, which would never really were. There was a job, Mr. Gordon, and any complaints. Yes, sir, me meat's too fat. Well, lean it up against your potatoes, lad. You probably heard that joke yourself.
But you were saying there were very, very few complaints.
There was no complaints.
Would they seriously listen to you? I mean, it's all right asking are there any complaints as a kind of part of the drill.
I have to tell you now that I now know that it would probably take very little. But at the time, the feeling was that, yes, they were there, and yes, they would listen to you. Now I know, I don't think they would, they were, let me tell you this, that in the tank corps, I really did learn the real meaning of, what is that, noblesse oblige, i.e. you were the master, sir, and I appreciate that, so long as you appreciate me. And that was quite prevalent in the tank corps. Get back before the war, and it was, I can understand in other regiments. Can you imagine an officer or officers and men in a rugby scrum? The battalion I went to, the rugby team was the Southern Command coupleness, made up of officers and privates, or troopers as we eventually became. It was more give and take. It's rather than, excuse me, sir, but rather than, sir, permission to talk. I never heard that expression. Oh, I can mention one idiosyncrasy. Each Friday during our training, there was what we called the adjutant parade. The whole company was on parade, proper parade, and what have you. And when the parade finished, with all the officers, supernumeraries, and officers were there doing that, when the parade finished, the order was given, fall out the gentlemen. And the officer would step forward, turn right, salute, and march off, and form up. And then the squad sergeant, march off. I never did see this, but I did experience the results of it. But one day, apparently, the order was given, fall out the gentlemen. And the trooper, or private, stepped forward, turned right, saluted, marched off. Get that man! And when he was alone, he said, excuse me, sir, but I am considered a gentleman where I came from. He was still given his jankers, but the order from then on was follow the officers. So, I think it had happened, because the characters of some of these are capable of that. I don't, but as I say, I never saw it happen. I think if you were on driving, you wouldn't not be on the, you would be on driving, so you say, we miss that. So, noblesse oblige between officers and my man. Yes.
And we're talking about, we got to the lunchtime, actually, yes.
Yes.
So after lunch, after the lunch was over.
It would be more drill, or Yes, it will be more drill into Pruneys once again, out on the drill square, and we would continue with our drill, which I'll explain. And by the way, halfway through that initial 5 week training period, the general order came down from the Army Council that a new threes drill would be brought in. So we had to unpick all our holes and get into three drill, but that's beside the point. Come three or half past three, finish drill, then we'd be into overalls. What would we do? Because we nothing to do with tanks, you see, this first there was no.
You would have jobs to do, you little.
We would be in overalls for ranges, rifle range, revolver range. And incidentally, today you see them with the revolvers, always 200 in front of them. We were never allowed to do that. It was always,
one hand.
Yes, and incidentally, you do it instinctive, and that is you don't need to look at anyone, but you say, that felt, turn away and put your hand out and say, I am pointing at that chap over there, and you look at him and you are pointing to him. But take your finger away and put a revolver there, and so you're halfway to being a reasonably good revolver shot by instinct, you know. The usual, of course, business of squeezing one and pulling the trigger and all that sort of thing. And also we used to have to do revolver muscle drill. The muscles in your hand when you use a revolver. And so with the revolver empty, of course, the hole, we would be doing revolver drill.
What revolver did you have?
We were first issued out, I was first issued out with a First World War .45 revolver, and about the following week they were all taken off and we were given .38s, and that's what we went.
Were they efficient weapon?
I always got to, because I was pretty good shot. Well, at the top of the list in the
Scottish. Yeah, I was going to ask you, were they accurate as well?
Yes, I would say so.
What kind of range would you say was
it? Up to 30 yards. And of course, it was the usual, the ordinary in and out of target, or the moving man.
It would have quite a kick on it, did it?
Oh, yes.
So what was the, for better word, and the knack of hitting your target, knowing that it was going to jerk?
Press down with your thumb as you pull the trigger. Well, it would jerk, but...
did you aim low, or did you aim exactly for the spot?
Aim at the bottom, say the bullet. Aim at the bottom of the bullet. Be there. Now, it was accepted that left-hand people could use the left hand. And funnily, I am right-handed, but I found I got more accuracy by using the left hand than the right hand. Then, of course, there was the rifle.
Was it a six shooter?
Six chambers
cartridge.
Yes. Yes. The this business of inspecting on the drill square, we never did. Our sergeant told us that one time they did have dummy bullets, and you would learn how to. But I think they realised that that's bordering on the too dangerous side. And so the loading of your revolver on that drill was always done on the right, on the revolver range.
How did you keep it clean after firing and so forth?
Once it's been fired, you go back to your barracks, the barrack room. Three or four crew leaders would go across the cookhouse and get three or four tea buckets full of scalding water, and we'd pour boiling water through them, and then of course two or four, and
had a little pull through, did it?
Yes, a little blast effort. The same as
Same principle as the rifle. So you fired the revolver and then you fired the 303, did you?
Not at once. We would do that another afternoon. It would be no, but 303. And of course, I say, we were taught the prone position and the standing up position, and, but no drill. Drill on how to, for loading and stuff, yes, but no real water arms and smoke arms and what have you.
And you said that was in case you picked a rifle up on a battlefield rather than...
You see, the point is this, and it's a tradition today, we are mounted infantry. You see, for example, when the first retreat in the desert, we pushed it back, we had no tanks. Well, we landed, the majority of my battalion landed into Rook, and it was being hastily prepared for defence by the 10th Australian Division, Infantry Division. And we were given rifles, and I became an infantryman, so you see, it came in handy.
Which we'll deal with later, of course.
I didn't make any mistakes on saluting, but then we didn't have to salute them.
Did you get in these early stages any gas precautions training?
Yes, that was the other overall one. Yes, one hut was put aside, was all sealed up and what have you, and after quite an extensive training with your gas mask. But by the way, all you drill, you will have a gas mask day. Keep the gas mask on all day and do a normal day's training. That can be real about it as well. But halfway through this gas drill, you began to say, well, what's the use of that damn thing? Can't we take it off? And just to prove that it was doing something, we had to go in and took into this room, sent into this pit, doors were closed, then the tear gas capsule was set away, and then he was just standing at ease, of course he was out of gas mask, so he tested the signals on it. And then we would go through various exercises, gymnastic, you know, exercises, trips the doors, arms out, what have you, thing like that, and then attention, right. Gas masks off! Oh, get out as fast as you could. Yes, they were damn good. There was a good, you know, a good exercise to tell you, look, this gas mask is doing you good. Because you did, you say, well, it's doing nothing, you're just breathing fresh air, but right, no, it gives you confidence in your gas mask. It was a very good lesson with that.
At the end of your afternoon drill, what happened to you?
By drill, and then we say gas mask training, and then or rifle range or revolver range. By that time, it'd be 5 o'clock. Then the time was your own after that.
What about tea? Did they give you a tea?
Oh yes, tea. That was the you were marched over, and you had to go back just the same way. Tea, well, it depends what you had for dinner. If it was fish, then it would be fish based food. If it was pork, it would be pork based or something. You know, it was okay. And by the way, if you wanted to, you could nip across. I think 9 o'clock each night, if you wanted to, and have given a mug of tea and a slice of bread for yourself, but usually you went to the nappy for that, you know. But as I say, from 5 o'clock, your time was your own. Yeah. Oh, yeah? You had everything to clean, polish, get everything there. You didn't have any time off whatsoever.
A very hectic program, right through to lights out. Mm-hmm. What did the naffy serve?
All the tea and buns and that sort of thing, you know, and anything you require, your blanco, all the metal polish, your boot polish, writing letters, material for home. upstairs billiards, or go next door to the wet canteen and have yourself a laugh, you know. I found that you couldn't go to the canteen too often and save. And so I'd go to the canteen and have a game of billiards and say, oh, just go off home, we'll chat. But then there was very little time to do that. The Natalie wasn't occupied. It was occupied more by A Company, who were the administrators, you know. And by the way, I'm talking about companies here, not squadrons. That's perfectly true. It's not a slip of the tongue. We were Royal Tank Calling, and we were privates, and we were in companies. It was on the 3rd of April 1939 when the Royal Armoured Corps was formed, bringing in to undercover all the cavalry regiments which had been, some of them which had been mechanised, others to be mechanised, or what have you. And you would have thought today, I'm sure it would have been different. If you, for instance, if you're a doctor, and a whole lot of us said, look, we want to be doctors, then you're not going to come with me and learn off me. You're surely going to teach us. But it was quite the opposite. The tank corps was absorbed into the cavalry rather than the other way around, and to form the Royal Armoured Corps. You can't have a corps within a corps. Well, you can, but this they can't. So we became the Royal Tank Regiment. Then we became, companies became squadrons, privates became troopers, and that was only that. That's the difference. But as I say, I'm way back in 1936, there were companies and
I forgot to ask you, what was the date of that you actually joined? You actually joined the army.
The 5th of August, 1936. That would be the time was sworn in at Durham, by the way.
Medicals, when you got there, you had one going in to join, of course.
At Durham.
Within the training situation itself.
Yes. I knew that we weren't doing I only give you about four subjects there, but you see, there was medical inspections, there was dental inspection, dental treatment, and so on. And also, of course, which I'm forgetting all about, and that is education. We did English, military history, regimental or corps history, theory of map reading, and mathematics, which was completely and utterly new to me. I left school when I was always fairly good with numbers, but if you said, you know, trigonometry and what have you, I said, heaven's name you're talking about. I learned that in the Royal Tank Corps, and I say without hesitation, the Royal Tank Corps is the army in general, and the Royal Tank Corps in particular, was my university, because I later on, when I went to my unit, and that's what tends to be surprising then, I went in for a correspondence course and gained my London matriculation, first, the army first class honours, a lad that couldn't pass his present. Mind you, the English wasn't too good. Well, the English was okay, but he fell.
And this would be a Royal Army education for a person, was it?
It was civilian. I'm trying to think of it. I couldn't think of it. It was well known that it was music hall. I got my education through the correspondence course, which of course was the forerunner really of Morton University.
But the gentleman who, or the officer who was giving you this education within the unit, was that Royal Army Education
Corps?
No,
it was Royal Tank Corps. It was a Lance Corporal as well, I always remember. No, sir, don't call me sir, call me Lance Corporal. Yes.
And there was an attempt within this to give you regimental pride and in its history. In its
For instance, this business of square batting, it wasn't continuous. Lord Bowen members were very good at it. He could spot when they were getting a bit tired and slowly with it. And he'd stop and he wouldn't really have it. He'd halt, stand at ease. Now, what do you know about Dorset? For instance, that over there, that's Gallows Hill. Let me talk about Gallows Hill. And that, incidentally, this, always remember this, he says, up there is Clouds Hill. And the cottage up there was where Lawrence of Arabia used to live. He was killed about just weeks before I joined up, and Lawrence of Arabia was all around the camp when I was Lawrence of Arabia. Actually, later on in my training, the book of when we were out of camp, I walked over to I forget now, which is about a mile, 3 or 4 miles west, where he's buried, obviously where he saw his grave, you know. But I know the exact spot where he had his crash with his brush superior motorcycle. And what's more, of course, when we were there, this cottage was barred up, and I pulled the wood up and got inside the cottage, which is dark, and I got outside. Because it's National Trust, it is.
I didn't ask you whether your route marches were part of your training.
Well, come to that, it wasn't. But if you were talking about when I'll just we'll come back to this later. But after 5 weeks, the drill part of our life receded. Never went away, and we went to the driving and maintenance school. For the 22 weeks, then up to 22 weeks and 8 days leave, we came back and we went to the Woolworth Gunnery School, which was 6 miles away, and in light marching order we did that route and back again, and that was our only route march that we did, and that was sufficient. Oh, you say sufficient? Yes. Can I put it this way? A Royal Tank Corps training squad was in miniature, a microcosm of the entire corps, because we'd go to various battalions. So, let's see what happened to those battalions. The 3rd Battalion, I can't give you the dates now, I'm going to open your book. The 3rd Battalion, it was in Greece when the Greece army collapsed. And some were evacuated, while others had to take to the hills and became attached to the Greek resistance movement. Where was your young from there, eh? They were up to it. What about our 2nd Battalion? When the Japanese came into the Burma, they had a yomp, a really yomp, from the River Tin, I think it was, to the Indian Burmese border, yomping all the way.
So what you're saying is that you're fit enough to do it
you're
when you had to do it.
I can tell you about ours as well in France, but I mean, and I said, yeah.